Good afternoon, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome in for this edition of the Bill Buckmaster Show. If you're not recognizing this voice as Bill's, you are correct. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, for this hour, morning drive time show host here on 1030 The Voice, and stepping in for the great Bill Buckmaster as your guide for this hour. Welcome on in, and thank you for being here. The Buckmaster Show is, of course, broadcasting from the Greenthean Zocalo Village studio. We thank them for their support. Also, the Buckmaster Live Line today, 790-2040, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go ahead and get right into it. Joining us now from the nation's capital, our first guest is Terry Bracey. Terry is our expert on Washington and governmental affairs. Terry Bracey's unique role in representing Tucson's interests began with a 10-year stint on the staff of famed Congressman Mo Udall. Terry was then appointed to sub-cabinet by President Carter and served subsequently under four presidents of both parties. He is the founding partner of the respected public affairs firm Bracey Tuck Brown, which has worked on many of Tucson's successes in the nation's capital. Let's welcome on in now Terry Bracey. Terry, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Hey, Zach. Nice for you to fill in for Bill. I hear he's a little under the weather. He's kind of the lion of broadcasting in Arizona, you know, and much respected. It's just amazing what the kind of show he's put together, fair to everybody. It's like the days used to be, huh? It's really a pleasure to appear on his show, and thank you for filling in.
Well, absolutely. He's a mentor of mine and someone I'm trying to follow in the business and kind of presenting that even-handed news and not telling you what to think, but giving you things to think about and trust the listeners to do the work. Terry, I know I've got a lot to ask you here today, but how about that Wildcat softball team, huh?
Well, aren't they something? Aren't they something? Going to the World Series, I'll tell you, what a team. I've been following them. You know, I was a pretty good baseball player, Zach, when I was a kid. I played Legion ball and whatnot, and I was a particularly good hitter, and one day I got challenged by this pitcher for a women's softball team to hit one of to bat against her. And I kind of laughed it off, but then I stood up there and I struck out. I didn't come close. these are great athletes.
They are incredible. And you know, I'm a bit of a I'm a wannabe sportscaster, and one of my friends in that business here remarked, really, what an incredible spring this has been for U of A sports. Whether it's the women's basketball team or softball. I mean, there's four or five major sports out of the U of A here that are doing extremely well. But Terry, I know time is short. I read your weekend column in the Star about your description of how President Biden has changed Washington in your mind. Can you give us a quick summary? Our listeners can read it, but we have you here on the air. What's your view of the changes that President Biden has brought to D.C.?
Well, Zach, first, there's a complete changing mood. It's kind of like the difference between listening to heavy metal and classic rock. You know what I mean? It's a quieter time, more purposeful, no more governance by Twitter. The front page of the Washington Post isn't filled with controversy at the White House. It's a calmer mood, and it's worked its way kind of into ordinary life with neighbors once again visiting in the streets and maybe not so afraid to talk about politics.
You know, Terry, I mentioned in the intro, you've been a part of D.C. for a while. You've served under four presidents of both the Republican and Democratic parties. Does mood really have that big of an effect in your mind on the effectiveness of government? We've certainly seen our Republican friends say that, you know, they, of course, disagree on policy and they go, hey, that Twitter was loud, but things were getting done. Is that your view? Does mood have any tangible effect on the effectiveness of government?
Oh, it has a huge effect. You can go back to great Republican presidents like George Bush Sr. and the way he treated the civil service. But President Trump spent 4 years berating the people who work for him, the civil servants who really operate the departments, many of whom are really brilliant. You know, not only do these folks fight our wars, but we're talking about people, Zach, who invented the internet, self-driving cars, the first advances in breast cancer cures. We employ in the government many of the best scientists in the world, and when a president constantly and unjustifiably criticizes them every day, it really hurts morale. And I think Biden is fixing that.
We're with Terry Bracey, the Washington and governmental affairs expert here on the Buckmaster Show here at noon. Besides the mood, Terry Bracey, what do you think is changing? What are President Biden's accomplishments so far in your mind?
Well, Zach, certainly number one is this remarkable effort to distribute the vaccine with more than half of the country covered in less than 3 months. I mean, I have never seen a cooperative public-private effort so successful in all my years here. Second, I think, Zach, his ability to engineer through Congress with the slimmest majorities a massive relief bill that not only provided money but restructured the delivery of many social programs. Most importantly, I think, Zach, channeling more money towards the issue of child poverty. And next, he's immediately kind of reconnected us with our traditional allies abroad, and I think, importantly, rejoined the climate accord. Those are a few things.
Sure. Terry Bracey, you've been in this seat before, appointees to the government, appointees to the cabinet positions and sub-cabinet positions. Give us an overview, as you see it, of President Biden's appointees so far. Good, bad, and different. How do you feel?
Well, Zach, I think he's made the strongest appointment since President Reagan was able to lure into government, you know, Republican stars like James Baker and George Shultz. Biden's chief of staff, Ron Klain, is a strong, proven, experienced guy, very good. And I really like his cabinet, from the quiet and brilliant Tony Blinken at State to the experienced Janet Yellen at Treasury to having Pete Buttigieg, a really guy full of energy, lead a massive infrastructure program that's to come. And I'm pleased to know that Mayor Romero has already been talking to Secretary Buttigieg about all our problems in Tucson.
Yeah, Terry, I did want to touch on, at least ask one question, maybe two if we have time, on the infrastructure package that is in the works. It was interesting to see a poll that the majority of Americans, if you ask them, what is the American Jobs Plan? What is the American Rescue Plan? Would have no idea. They're receiving the benefits, but they have no idea what it's called and what it's doing, which I think might pose a challenge to the president down the road. Do you see a compromise in our future on the infrastructure package? Are Republicans and Democrats going to come together to get this done somehow, some way?
Well, of course, I'd like to see that. And I know the president would, but I think the odds are really not against it. Zach, I point to the time when I was representing Tucson and I went to the Hill with Mayor Walkup to see a unnamed Republican member of the Arizona delegation to ask for help with securing support for downtown rebuilding, in particular the streetcar. That member stopped Mayor Walkup in mid-sentence and announced that he really could be of no help. And why? Because he just walked out of a Republican conference and they decided that without exception, they were going to oppose everything that President Obama proposed. And their goal was for him to fail, not for the country to get ahead, but for him not to be reelected. And of course, they failed at that. But the Republicans in the Senate are badly led, and unfortunately, they're led by the same person who came up with that particular approach. Nonetheless, Biden is a resilient guy, and I think he'll use the reconciliation process and push through a historic infrastructure program.
Terry Bracey, the expert here on the Buckmaster Show on Washington governmental affairs. A quick follow-up and probably last question on that. Terry, as you look at the Republican conversation around infrastructure, is this obstructionism or a matter of a narrower definition of infrastructure? Is it the same as it was during the Obama years, or is it just a different definition, Democrats with an expanded definition, Republicans with a more traditional and comparatively narrower definition of infrastructure?
Well, I think it's both. There are maybe as many as 10 Republican members of the Senate who would very much like to be in play in structuring a traditional infrastructure package, by which we mean roads, bridges, not so much streetcars and rail, but there is a group of Republicans who want a traditional package and would vote for it. But by and large, I think with the leader there, they're looking for excuses to vote against it. And it's very unfortunate. I keep hoping, and I know the president is hoping, that maybe we can put together a package which is less than the president wants, but really gets the job done, and maybe doesn't include some of the social edge programs that he would like to see. If a compromise were really possible, I think he might do it, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Terry Bracey reporting from the nation's capital. Terry, thanks so much for your time today, as always, and we'll talk again soon.
Great job, Jack.
Terry, appreciate it. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented, of course, by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open now for breakfast and lunch from 6:30 a.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Treat yourself to their mouth-watering pastries, including their famous Danish Kringle. Mona'sDanishBakery.com or BuckmasterShow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery to see their menu and where to go visit them. Definitely encourage you to do that. Buckmaster often brings them into the studio and hooks us all. So wonderful. Of course, Zach Yenser here standing in for the great Bill Buckmaster. He'll be back again soon, don't worry. On the other side of the break, financial consultant Shelley Fishman calls in talking about the markets and what is ahead. As always, we'll be right back after a short break here on Buckmaster. Don't go away. Tucson and Southern Arizona, welcome back in for this Tuesday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Zach Yenser, your host here, standing in for Bill. We're broadcasting from the Green Theme Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line, 790-2040, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On with us now is Shelley Fishman. Shelley, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us today.
Zach, good afternoon to you, and thank you for filling in for Bill.
Well, it's a real honor, and I get to talk to really interesting people like yourself. When I saw what was on your mind today, I was really glad that you're going to cover what you're going to cover. Of course, we're really interested here about what the president has submitted in terms of a budget and what's going to be the outcome of that. And we're going to talk some financial reports, too. There's a lot swirling around that all impacts each other. So talk to us about the president's budget. It's been pronounced dead on arrival by the Republican side of Congress. What's likely to be the outcome? And once we do get the spending figured out, how's it going to get paid for?
Well, the budget itself, of course, like most budgets submitted by most presidents to most Congresses, was pronounced dead on arrival by the opposing party. So that's just kind of the way things work. The budget is actually a combination of things. It includes, for the most part, the spending that's already been approved and that is underway. You know, the federal fiscal year begins in September, so we're already just about three quarters of the way past the end of this current fiscal year. The next fiscal year was to have, if it didn't change from this year, we would have had about $5.7 trillion in spending. Instead, we're going to have, if this budget were to be passed without it being changed, we'd have about $6 trillion. So it's about a $300 billion with a B, a dollar difference. Now, it's the details that are in that difference that are really important. And what we've been hearing, of course, about those details are in all of the bills that have been submitted or proposed or talked about that are being submitted by the administration, you know, including the infrastructure plan and some of the other plans that the administration has submitted. And so they're all, you know, being negotiated or, you know, potentially could be passed, because we're talking about financial bills now, could be passed under the reconciliation process.
You know, what's interesting, I think, the big broad, and this does not take into any account any of the nuances, Shelley, but does spending deficits matter anymore? Does it matter, Shelley, how much money the government prints and spends? There's a lot of people today that I just think don't think that it matters. Are they right? Are they wrong?
Well, if that's a great question, Zach, because the answer is nobody knows. There's something called a new economic theory that really says that deficits don't matter and that governments up to a certain limit, and we're not quite sure what that limit is, that governments can print as much money as they like without it affecting inflation and without it really affecting the buying power of Americans. So long as interest rates are low, therefore, under new economic policy or new economic monetary theory, you can, you know, pretty much run as many deficits as you like, and it is not going to have a deleterious effect on the economy. Now, a lot of people think that's just nonsense, and a lot of people will say, look, at the past 40 years, we've been running deficits for most of that time, and we've had inflation in around the 2% area. So traditional economic thinking that you know, has characterized the post-World War II years is proving to be, you know, well, let's call it evolving.
Shelley, I know you also have a financial report to give us here in this segment. I want to segue there by also saying there's some economists, and economists that are in favor, by the way, of the Biden agenda. These are not conservative economists who are saying, boy, when we look at what our financial forecasts right now, when we look at what's going to result from this enormous amount of spending, we're not seeing data points that show that GDP is going to increase that much past what was already predicted kind of during the Trump-Biden transition. In other words, the spending may not really matter as much as everybody would hope. What financial reports are coming out, Shelley, that may support or make harder the passage of the president's economic agenda here coming up?
Well, you know, financial reports get issued by everybody, you know, all the big banks, all the big investment firms. The two most, I think, influential sets of reports is one that gets issued by the Fed, and then the other that gets issued by the Congressional Budget Office. Both those sets of reports are pretty consistent in thinking that the growth of GDP for the balance of this calendar year will come in at around 6%. Now, that's a much larger number than we've had, oh gosh, since the Eisenhower years. But remember where we're coming from. So if you were to take a look at not the last year during the pandemic, but the year before that, and then take a look at what this year's growth really represents, it's a slight increase in the area of about 2.5%. That seems to be a consistent opinion that we're getting from the largest predictors. Now, if we start spending a great deal of money, the question is, will that increase GDP growth significantly? I think the consensus there is that there's no way that it couldn't. The question is, will it overheat the economy? And what we're hearing, even from the, you know, the more conservative, democratic, if you will, economists, is there's some danger there. And so the Fed is going to have to be careful and make sure that if we see the signs of inflation, that they begin to put the brakes on the economy a little bit. And you know, the Biden administration, by and large, is poo-pooing all of that and saying, look, we have no indications historically that this kind of spending will do anything but, number one, pretty much pay for itself over time, and number two, create benign growth. In other words, growth that does not result in an overly tight labor market or the results of an overly tight markets, which are inflation that's uncontrolled.
And we're with Shelley Fishman here on the Buckmaster Show. I think I've got time for one more question, Shelley, and I think I can fit it in. Sort of as you've hinted at, the sub 2% annual growth prediction. And by the way, when we talk about 1.6% and 2% GDP growth, that 0.4% is actually a lot of money. It sounds small, but it's a lot. But it's a little different from current models like the one, as you said, the Congressional Budget Office is forecasting that we are going to see the growth that we were already prepared to have without the spending. Does this make it easier or harder on the Biden administration? They're, of course, denying it. But what does this mean in terms of making the sausage?
Well, what it means is that you have to take the economic, prognostications, put them aside, and say, and I'm really reflecting a much more pro-Biden policy shift here, is what does the country need? You know, are the roads falling apart or are they not? Do we not have the kinds of, high-speed internet access that the country needs to progress? Can companies count on having the infrastructure in place where they need it in order to grow their companies? So you have to take these actual qualitative issues of what we need as a country and set them aside from from what the likely economic consequences might be. And when you do that, then you begin to make some decisions about what the country needs to do and in what time frames. And what's really important here is to understand is we have done a frighteningly little amount of infrastructure repair or growth over the past, two or three decades. And that has set us apart from the rest of the world, which, could very well surpass us, not only in its investment, but in its ability to attract capital and attract customers and attract manufacturing.
Shelley Fishman, less than a minute and a half here. We know that this is about the time of the year when presidents, Republican and Democrats, see a summer slump. Are the markets still responding positively to the Biden agenda and the Biden administration?
Well, so far the markets are doing, unbelievably well. We get a couple of days of setbacks, and then they come right back where they were. We're up a little bit today, which Bill and I always joke about because on Tuesdays the markets, somehow go negative on us. But what I think we're going to see is an average market growth this year when it all comes down to it. So that says that between now and the end of the year, we could be pretty much flat. And that would leave us with about a 12% growth, which is historically, where the markets have been for the past, gazillion years. So I'm not looking for a lot more growth from what we've seen between the election day and today. But, we could get some.
Financial consultant here on the Buckmaster Show, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, as always, great to hear from you. Thanks for being on.
Zach, thanks again. We'll see you next week.
Sounds great. And we'll be back after bottom of the hour here with Dr. Woosley. Don't go anywhere. And we're back, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Good afternoon to you. Welcome back in for this noon hour, the Tuesday edition of the Bill Buckmaster Show here on 1030 The Voice. We are here in the Green Theme Zocalo Village studio. Our guests today have appeared on the live line courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, sitting in for the great Bill Buckmaster. And we do want to take a moment and appreciate Green Themes, a longtime supporter of the program. Since 1970, Green Themes has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Themes is on a lovely 13-acre site that is also home to Zocalo Village and all of those fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Themes on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthemesaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Now it's time for our monthly segment on the Buckmaster Show, focusing on your medication and how to take control of your health care. The Your Meds segment features Dr. Ray Woosley, former U of A College of Medicine dean and founder and now president emeritus of Tucson-based Critical Path Institute. Dr. Woosley's latest venture is the creation of Credible Meds, one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicine. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from 180 countries. Visit CredibleMeds.org today. With that, Dr. Woosley, thanks as always for being with us. Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm good, Zach. It's good to be with you. And it's a shame that Bill's laid up, but I know he'll be back better than ever. And I've been listening. You're doing a great job in covering in his absence. So look forward to talking with you.
Dr. Woosley, it's a lot of pressure and big shoes, but we're doing our best. And for all of the longtime, over a decade plus listeners of Bill Buckmaster, he will be back. We'll keep doing our best, but the great Bill Buckmaster will be back in no time at all. I believe that. Dr. Woosley, we're talking vaccines and COVID today. Lots of questions out there. Do you have some answers for us? Give us an update.
Well, I think, you know, there's been a lot of press lately about how much better things are looking, and I don't want to throw cold water on that, but I think it's like Anthony Fauci said, we're not out of the woods yet, and we've made a lot of progress, and the vaccination rate in the country was exceptionally good. It's slowing down, though, and we've got to remember that there's still almost 500 deaths every day. And the deaths are occurring in people who've not had the vaccine. So we've got vaccine available. And I just wanted to use our time with you today to talk about how important to everybody listening it is to become, if you're able to be vaccinated, you should do so. And, you know, everyone over 12 now can get a vaccine. And the vaccines are extremely safe, safer than any that's ever been developed, frankly. And they've been well tested over the last 10 to 15 years, so we know how they work, and we know that they can save lives. So I just want to encourage everyone to do what they can to become vaccinated and help us stop the deaths that are still occurring.
Dr. Ray Woosley, a couple questions in follow-up to that, and thank you for your report today. Let's speak to what happens, and we hope it doesn't to any of our listeners, but either someone who hasn't gotten COVID or is not yet vaccinated gets COVID, but certainly we know that there are breakthrough cases. They're rare, but you can still get COVID after you have gotten the vaccine. The CDC is not reporting those in all the same ways. But however someone should get COVID, how do you know if you get it, and what should you do? What's your advice, Dr. Ray Woosley?
Well, I think you're right. People, even vaccinated, it's rare, but can develop symptoms. But much more commonly, people who have risk factors that have not gotten vaccinated for whatever reason can still develop the illness. And people need to realize, everyone needs to remember, that there are effective treatments. So I would encourage anyone who thinks they've got COVID to become tested, contact their healthcare provider to have testing done. And if it's starts to become serious, there are treatments that can really save lives. And it's a shame because these treatments aren't being used as often as they should. These are the antibody treatments that President Trump received when he was very ill that contributed to saving his life are available. And I think it's important, even though we've got the vaccine, for everybody to remember that they should work with their healthcare provider to receive those kinds of treatments if they're needed as early as possible, because if you wait too long, they have less chance of benefit.
Dr. Ray Woosley, are those antibody infusion treatments discussed on CredibleMeds.org, or are you able today to kind of share maybe one or two that our listeners can take a note on if they need to investigate that further?
I'll make sure that we've got it posted on our website, the links where they can learn about the antibody treatments. I think the main thing is to know that they are available. There's at least two drugs that have been approved by the FDA for treatment. I would also remind everybody that there's a lot of people still using unproven treatments that can actually cause harm. So I strongly encourage everybody to work with their healthcare provider to only take those treatments that have been proven effective and in the way that they've been shown to be effective, because there's still a lot of false information out there.
We're with Dr. Ray Woosley here on the Buckmaster Show here. Dr. Woosley, I'd be curious your thoughts on some of the recent reports that have come out in the New York Times. The most recent one spoke to both the long-lastingness, that's probably not the technical term, but we're seeing the antibodies from either natural or acquired immunity last longer than expected. And in some cases, some research is showing that if you got COVID and have those antibodies and you stack that with a vaccine, you may not need a booster. I know we're starting to think now a lot about how long is these antibodies last? Is it 3 months, 6 months, 8 months? Do we need a booster? Well, the data that you're looking at, Dr. Woosley, any answers, anything that the signs are pointing to that you can share today?
Well, I think the signs are encouraging, as you mentioned. People who've had an infection and then get the vaccine really have a whopping response, and they may not even need an annual booster. I think the belief is that we've got to be prepared for perhaps an annual booster for many people. And the good news is the antibody levels are lasting at least 6 months, and they're being tracked, so we'll know more about how long they last. And we'll also need to learn what level of antibody is likely to be effective. We haven't. That's a very difficult question to answer, but it we are gathering that data, and I think we will know more. But I think we've taken a conservative approach to be prepared to use a booster, but hopefully it won't be. It'll at least be an annual booster, like we have for the flu vaccine.
Another piece of good news, if you can verify it, Ray Woosley, Dr. Ray Woosley, is whether natural or acquired immunity, we are seeing the antibodies be more responsive to different variants. Am I correct in that? I do want to fact check that. There was concern that the variants would outpace the antibodies, either natural or acquired. We're seeing these antibodies, once they get in your system, to be very strong, right?
Right, and they have broad effectiveness, and so far, the variants that have developed around the world seem to be susceptible to the vaccine. So that's really good news. But I remind everybody that every day that we're still having this pandemic, there's the likelihood of an almost guarantee that there will be more variants. That's what vaccines do. I'm sorry. That's what viruses do. They mutate and they change. And the problem is that the longer we have millions of people around the world being infected, there's the greater likelihood that something's going to develop a mutation that won't be controlled by the vaccines. Now, there's no evidence that we have that fear right now, but we've got to remember that as we can, we need to get everybody around the world vaccinated, not just in the U.S., in order to protect the U.S. from these potential mutations.
This has been Your Meds segment, a monthly segment featuring Dr. Ray Woosley. Take control of your health care. Focus on your medication. Monthly advice. Dr. Woosley, it's been a pleasure to chat with you today, and thanks for being on with us as always, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you, sir. CredibleMeds.org. Go ahead and visit that. Some of what we discussed today is or will be up on that site. We're going to go to our final break of the hour here, this noon hour of the Buckmaster Show. When we come back, high school all-star game ahead. We'll talk to famous coach Jeff Skurin on the other side. Don't go anywhere. And we're back here in the Green Thien Zuccolo Village studio, continuing this hour of the Buckmaster Show. It is Tuesday, June 1st. Welcome to the month of June. Our guests have been calling in on the Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. This segment also couldn't be possible without the support of Silver City and Grant County. They're ready to welcome you back with open arms, just 3 hours east of Tucson. That's amazing to me that it's only 3 hours east of Tucson. I wouldn't have thought. There's so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where there is plenty of social distancing, and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. To help us close out the hour here, we're talking to Coach Jeff Skurin, all the way in Germany, a Hall of Fame coach, one of the winningest coaches in Arizona history, instrumental in putting the high school all-star game together. Coach Skurin, good afternoon, Arizona time to you. How are you?
Hey, guten Tag. Good to hear from you.
Yes. So I understand that there's a big game coming up. Am I right?
Yes, and I'm very happy that this thing has come off with a great assistance from the city of Tucson, particularly Vice Mayor Paul Cunningham, the Arizona Bowl with Kim Adair at the head, and just something really good for these seniors to give them one last little boost from the city and to let them know how much we all, you know, hated to see all this stuff happen. But, you know, what happens, happens. And I'm glad to see these kids made it through high school and give them one more chance to get the little limelight and play football together on kind of a big stage. So it's real cool. I'm real happy we did this.
No, it's great for the city. It's great for our football programs here. It's great for those seniors. Now, Jeff Skern, Coach Jeff Skern, on the line with us. Are any of these exiting football players at the high school level here, are they also seniors from the last year? We know that COVID 2020 really prevented a lot of great players from playing their last year fully of high school football. Is that related at all to what we're looking at here?
No, it's just the kids from this year.
Got
because
it.
Some of it has just to do with the liability of kid being out of the game for a long time. I'm dealing with that in Germany right here now, even in the pro leagues where they didn't play last year. So for a lot of these kids, it's been 18, 19 months
wow.
since they've actually played. And that's just a long time. The injury ratio gets really high. And, all of us today are so conscious of kids and their health and what damage we can cause without really thinking ahead. And so we tried to do all the right things with this game and really honor these kids from this year. And it would have been a really good idea to have the kids from last year, but most of them have moved on with their lives now. And football's just not the kind of game you kind of go out and play. You know, you got to prepare
right.
a little bit for it physically.
Right. Well, it's, again, good for those who are graduating this year. Happy for them. For sure. Now, is this something that our listening audience today can participate in, or are there limitations on community attendance? Give us kind of Coach Jeff Skern, a feel for what to expect and when and where and all that good stuff.
Well, it's 7 p.m. Friday night at Tucson High, and it is open to the public.
Okay.
You do have to have a ticket. They are free, but because the COVID thing, it's limited to 2,200. And anybody can call the Arizona Bowl Committee and get a ticket. And like I say, it's totally free for you and your family if you want to come. But they, like I say, the city did put a limit on it. But we just feel very happy that the kids' parents get to come and watch and their families get to watch these kids perform one last time. Because three or four months ago, we didn't know that was going to happen at all. So for 2,200, it's real nice in the Arizona Bowl. Committee decided to bite the bullet and just have these the tickets available for free. So if anybody wants to call them, they should just go to the Arizona Bowl and make arrangements to get the free passes.
I love it. What a great public-private partnership of all the right people coming to the table and making this happen. You're a Hall of Fame coach, one of the winningest coaches in Arizona history, Coach Jeff Skern, with us. You were instrumental in putting the high school all-star game together that we're talking about here. When we talk about all-stars, how do we pick who plays and give us a feel for some of the best who are playing for the Tucson community this Friday?
Well, we kind of called it an all-star game, but really, I think when I first got involved with this thing, when everybody asked me about it, what are the absolutes here? And one of the absolutes to me was we don't say no to anybody. We just don't want to say that word. You know, these kids have had too much no for the last 18 months. And so let's be the group that says yes. And so, and knowing full well, having done 17 All-Star games in my career, I know full well that for the best intention, a lot more kids sign up than are able to do it. And kids drop out. Things happen. Life happens. It's in the summer. They've graduated. A lot of them already. They're moving on to jobs and new locations, and families are moving, and a thousand different things. And so we took on a lot of kids, everybody that wanted to play, and which really isn't typical of an all-star game. But these are our Tucson all-star kids. That's what this game was all about. And it's really a showcase for their talent to give them one last chance to play and maybe get a tape that they can show to some college coach and perhaps move on to a higher level. Because most of the kids that have gotten scholarships and offers from college, even as a walk-on, that they probably, only a few of those kids will participate. Most of them are worried about the future and possibility of injury, which is unfortunate. The great coaches like Urban Meyer and Lou Holtz, who's formerly at Notre Dame, and Nick Saban in Alabama, they always let their kids play in All-Star games. But a lot of the others, they don't see it. You know, I've always been told if you got to count on a freshman, you're already in trouble already. So let's let these kids play and let's have a good time. And I bet the kids who play are going to have the time of their life.
Yeah.
They're going to get some great stuff because of the sponsors we have in the game. Again, that's so much thanks to Paul Cunningham and the Arizona Bowl. They're the ones that really made this happen.
I love it. I love it. And you know, as we, I could talk to you for two or three segments, Coach Jeff Skern. But in the time we have left, I was going to say you touched on something I think is important. It's a lot of people will go, okay, well, these kids didn't play sports for a year. It is what it is. But really, for those who are looking to move on and play beyond high school or use their football abilities to get a scholarship, it's all based on tape and people in stands watching them play, and you don't have that opportunity. You've literally lost a year. And so I, to me, with my limited knowledge, I think it's important that some of these kids get one more shot to have something on tape, and to move on.
You're right. The tape is so important because a lot of the colleges still aren't allowed to come out and hit the road recruiting. They're just not allowed to do that. And while the COVID threat has gone away, you got to remember, a lot of these colleges are really and financially in the red from the last year and a half trying to keep their sports programs alive and going. They haven't had people in the stands. They haven't been selling concessions and parking and fanware and all those things that you don't even think about that really add to the budget of a college. And so they've had to cut a lot of places, and face-to-face recruiting has been one of the casualties of COVID. And so if you know anything about the football profession, you know that, or sports in general, particularly football, game tape is the most valuable thing that a kid can get. So, yes, a lot of these kids might use this for the future, but also a lot of them will decide based on this game, you know, after they've been out of it for several months, you know, do you want to get back in? Because a lot of kids go to college thinking they're going to play football,
right,
and sometimes during the first year they decide it's not for them and they're just going to spend their time in academics, which is never a bad thing.
Sure. Coach Jeff Skern calling us from Germany Hall of Fame coach, one of the winningest in Arizona history. We're talking about the All-Star game pulled together by former vice mayor, no longer vice mayor, but a councilman, Paul Cunningham, City of Tucson, the Arizona Bowl, great public-private partnership to give some of these high school kids one last time to play the sport of football this Friday at 7. Coach, thanks for being with us this hour, and we'll talk to you soon.
Well, thank you, and please send my best wishes to Bill Buckmaster, one of the really classic guys in Tucson.
That's right.
And the voice of Tucson. And let's just all hope and pray that he recovers quickly and comes back as soon as possible. He's such a good man.
He is.
I miss him dearly.
I share that sentiment, Coach. And Bill, if you're listening out there, either live or listening back, we wish you all the best. I've been your host, Zach Yenser, for this hour, filling in. Thanks for listening, Tucson. That's it for us here on the Buckmaster Hour here on June 1st. Thanks to our sponsors and supporters, our listeners. We'll see you tomorrow, Wednesday, same time, same place. Take care, Tucson.